comes the money.
Here we go.
Money talk.
Here comes the money. Money, 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 money.
Dollar, dollar. Dollar, dollar. Ching, ching, bling, bling, cut your chatter. You ain't talking money, then you're talking no matter. Ching, ching, bling, bling.
Welcome, everybody, to the second edition of the Backdoor Cover IBN NFL podcast preview. I'm your host, IBS Yeezus, along with the normal host, but now co-host for this particular segment, Keith Fleming.
I like this co-host role. You know, you don't have to work quite as hard during the podcast, and I can just come in and try to say something witty about every 2-3 minutes.
Oh, man. I ain't gonna lie, I like the co-host role too. That's why I'm always excited when you host, but it's perfectly fine. So I will admit I have the Chiefs game on in the background.
Too.
So
bear with me. We look good though. One of the predictions yesterday was we said we like the Chiefs. I said I really liked them to cover. I said I'd take the over in pretty much every game this year, and their offense looks pretty unstoppable week one.
Yeah. I mean, they picked up right where they left off. So we're going to do NFC, and it'll be the same kind of, I guess, guidelines as yesterday.
Format.
We'll start with the NFC East, then we'll go to the NFC West, and then we'll do the North, and then we'll end with the NFC South.
Yeah.
So the NFC East, it just happens to be that the Cowboys are number one.
How about them Cowboys?
Yeah, America's team, the Cowboys. So the Cowboys are an interesting team, and I want to see what their regular season win is at, and I'm trying to get it to load up.
I have it at 9.5.
9.5?
Yeah.
Right. Let's see. Westgate has it headed at 10.
Okay.
So it's probably went down a little bit. But if you got 9.5, oh no, it's 10 on my bookie as well. The over is -110, the under is -120. Now, there's been news coming out lately this week about Dak and him opening up about what happened with his brother and how his brother committed suicide and how he's been suffering.
This whole conversation makes me uncomfortable. Not to interrupt you, but. Yeah. What Skip Bayless said, I believe it was yesterday, is disgusting. Basically saying, shut up and play football. I think it took courage for him to come out and basically openly admit that something that anybody in their right mind would understand is going to have an impact on you. And then to hear some of the negative reaction from, you know, people in the media, it's disgusting, honestly.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed too to see, like, especially in this day and age when there's so much more like openness and awareness on mental health, to see people kind of being like, suck it up, you know? I mean, Dax, I think his mom passed away when he was younger too, from cancer, or maybe like right after he got drafted or something. But I think mom or somebody close to him passed away. And then obviously relationship with his brothers was very, very close. And having one of them obviously kill themselves is really terrible. So with that being said, going into this week's game, Cowboys-Rams, the line has already started moving more towards the Rams. And I want to say that honestly it's because of the Dak news. Like, I think people are rightfully concerned from a gambling aspect, obviously.
Correct. Yeah.
Rightfully concerned about his mental state going into this game right now. Cowboys are visiting the Rams. Last year, the Cowboys were another Jekyll and Hyde, 9-7 against the spread, 8-8 straight up. They were 5-1 in their division, dominated the division. 5-1 in the division. Straight up, 5-1 against the spread, straight up. But it just, that out of division really hurt them. And they dropped games like the Jets. They dropped a game, which was absolutely disgusting. But I actually, I took the Jets. I think it was a situational play. But I took the points with the Jets. It was like a touchdown. They're visiting the Jets after coming from Green Bay, and it just didn't work out too well for them. I expect them to bounce back a little this year from a gambling aspect. The expectations should be with a new coach at helm who understands the game, understands how quarterbacks are supposed to play, understands how to call plays, and has had success. Mike McCarthy, things should be different. Defensively, they added Alden Smith. They added who else did they add? They added Gerald McCoy, and then he ended up getting hurt, unfortunately. But they've had some additions to their defense that are very interesting, especially from a pass rushing perspective. I expect this defense to be a lot more disruptive this year.
Don't you think, though, that Robert Quinn loss does hurt? Or do you think he was kind of losing a step at this point?
Now, to my knowledge, from what I saw last year, I think on like PFF and stuff like that, when he played, he was amazing.
That's right. Yeah.
Like production wise, he was playing above his normal production level. So I don't know if that's something that I feel like you would have to answer as the season goes on and you see how he's doing right now for wherever he's at this year. But last year, if he plays like he played last year, then yes, it's a huge loss because he was massively productive from PFF's perspective, and they usually are pretty solid about their analysis of who's productive and who's not. So he was massively productive from their standards, and I would say anytime you lose somebody like that, if they were to continue to play at that level, it would be a loss. But the news about Alden Smith coming out is pretty high, and the reason why I keep harping on the pass rushing and stuff like that, because I feel like the way that they drafted their cornerbacks and the way that they kind of have been setting up this team is they're going to be a takeaway defense, which is not something that we're used to seeing from the Dallas Cowboys. And if we can get a takeaway defense with an offense that's already built to control the clock, you're looking at spreads like Sunday, where it's a 3-point spread, where it's just like a layup, you know, because you're going against a guy in Jared Goff who has a tendency to turn the ball over, and you're playing against an offense who can control the clock. It could be the perfect storm for them. But again, we'll know more about it when we really get a feel for, you know, if Dak is really into the season or not. And it's perfectly understandable if he's not mentally, given everything that happened to him during the offseason. So I'm a little hesitant. I actually was going to use this game as one of my pick-ems, but I'm a little hesitant now. But the money line is still somewhat attractive in the Cowboys, minus 145. I'm not big on the Rams, and we'll get to them obviously in the next division. But right now, I think Dallas is probably the team to beat in the NFC East. A lot of people don't want to hear that, but if we're looking for a gambling angle this year, I think that trend of the division is going to stay. In fact, in the last 3 years, if you start at 2017, 2018, 2019, the Dallas Cowboys are 5-1 against the spread and straight up in their division all 3 years. And that's a healthy trend.
It's also a healthy trend that they have won the division every other year, going all the way back to 2014. And it is their turn once again this year to win. And they're also obviously helped by the fact that I don't think Philadelphia is going to be that great. The Giants have a lot of young talent, but I see them a ways away. And don't get me wrong, I don't think the Redskins are like a playoff team or anything, but I actually think the Redskins could end up being frisky. And I know we'll get that, in a minute. But the big thing to me is just you got Mike McCarthy at the helm. You have a offensive unit that has just weapons galore. I think Gallup was really impressive last year. We know that Amari Cooper and Dak Prescott have had a great relationship since they've been teammates on and off the field. Ezekiel Elliott has been just a consistent beast his entire time in the NFL. I saw the other day that he has the most 100-yard rushing games since his rookie season, but I think it's like 15 games. It shows the discrepancy between his performance on a week-to-week basis and every other running back in the league. And then the interesting, you know, draft pick, the CeeDee Lamb pick, which as a Falcons fan, I wanted us to draft him. And we were in a very similar situation to the Cowboys, where we have Calvin Ridley, we have Julio Jones. So you can make the argument, you know, do you really need a guy like this? But considering he's going to be predominantly, I think, used out of the slot, don't you think that's safe to say?
Yes and no. I hesitate because in thinking on and just to get sidetracked just real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
And thinking on what I saw on film when we were doing analysis of him leading up to the draft, I don't know if his route tree is that of somebody that I would think would be spending a lot of slot time or a lot of time in the slot in the NFL. But, I mean, it also could depend on, you know, the system that he came from and what was asked of him in Oklahoma. So I'm hesitant to give a direct answer because I really think I don't really know his true ceiling on his potential.
Well, so let's put it this way then. McCarthy, though, is the kind of guy that is, you know, good enough on the offensive side of the ball that he's going to find ways to enhance his strengths and get him involved. And I also am really excited for the Cowboys that they have equity. You know, that if, say, Cooper misses times to injuries or Gallup does, there's not going to be a far drop-off. And we've seen how much better Dak plays when he's surrounded by good offensive weapons. You know, his first couple of seasons, he was good. Like, he really was, but not explosive and didn't put up the big numbers he has the last couple of years. And that's because he was going to, and no disrespect to these people, guys like Cole Beasley, you know.
Oh, yeah,
and
for sure.
And it's a big difference when you have guys like Gallup, you know, Cooper and Lamb out there to go along with Elliott. I expect their offense to be extremely explosive. They don't have, I believe, a very difficult schedule. And I actually could see the Cowboys being the number one seed in the NFC if things kind of go right and they stay healthy. Because I do think what you were bringing up, they are going to dominate their division again. And I could easily see them going 12-4, 13-3. They're one of my favorite plays in the NFC to definitely hit the over, even if it is at 10 games.
Cowboys have the third easiest schedule in the NFL. So, I think with somebody like McCarthy at the helm, you can't be but so extreme with them. I think
there won't be as much clapping on the sideline this
people
year,
people being optimistic about the season with Dallas from a gambling perspective and as a fan, it's you're right, you know, like you have a right to be that way. And we'll
obviously, and I'm not a Cowboys fan, just a full disclaimer, so I am saying it strictly from I think they're in a very good position, and this is, you know, potentially their year, so they need to, you know, take advantage of that. But they definitely are, with their schedule, the moves they made both on the offensive and defensive side, I think where Dak's going to be as a quarterback, I believe his fifth year in the league, they're set up to really make a run.
Yeah, and one last thing before we switch teams, I think that people can depend on Dak Prescott from a gambler perspective as well. He was phenomenal last year for, I guess, production-wise with his yards and things like that. I know a lot of people talk about garbage time and things like that. The ridiculous issues with the Dallas Cowboys was more of an X and O thing, more of a coaching thing and play-calling thing, which has been their problem for years and years. Then
under
it was
the same guy.
Yeah, then it was execution by the players. So I don't have any issues with that. And again, like I said, the angle for me looking at Dallas is going to be against that division over and over and over again because they've been so great there. Switching over to the next team, a team that I don't know what to expect, man. I like Saquon Barkley, but I can't stand his team.
You're going the Giants then.
Yeah, they're the second team.
Okay.
The New York Football Giants. They're not the second. That's not the rank. It's just how it came up on my list. I have no confidence in Joe Judge. Everything I hear about Joe Judge and his coaching style just sounds like he's not going to make it long in the NFL. It's just ridiculous. I think I saw a thing today where he stopped practice and yelled at the players basically, and then made them like have to do everything over again or something like that. I'm like, dude, like it honestly sounds like what you would hear from like a college coach coaching freshmen.
That sounds like a damn high school coach.
Yeah. And it's like, dude, you're coaching professional athletes. At some point they're going to get pissed and not want to do anything for you. But it's one of those things about the Belichick tree, man. Like these guys get kudos for basically coaching beside Bill, and a lot of them are not that successful. And I think he was he a wide receiver coach or something like that?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I'm willing to give him a chance, but I'm not going to put a lot of money behind them. I don't know exactly what they'll be good at this year. They've got a lot of moving parts.
Should be pretty good on the offensive side of the ball, right?
Daniel Jones.
I mean, you think if Barkley stays healthy, I think they're going to be interesting on the offense.
Here's my thing about Barkley. He's great athlete and everything, but he can only do so much. Like, you can't dominate the game of football from the running back position anymore. You can statistically dominate, but it doesn't really translate to a lot of wins anymore. Like, you have to have a team around you. It's not as impactful of a position, and it shows up every free agency market, basically, but it's not that impactful anymore. I mean, look at Christian McCaffrey. Christian McCaffrey is one of the most dominant players at his position. His usage rate is through the roof, and the Panthers be lucky to get 5-6 wins with him.
Yeah, they haven't even been 500, I believe, in any of the years he's been there.
And so with the Giants, there's still going to be some growing pains in my mind for.
So you're not sold on Daniel Jones yet?
Nah, not yet. But I'm not down on him either. I just need to see more.
Right.
I need to see more. He's developing. The people around him are developing. If he can get like guys like Evan Engram, like to stay healthy and things like that, that would definitely help. But he's going into his second season and he's got a new coach, going to be a new system. So I'm not going to be too harsh on him, because, again, it's almost like he's a rookie again, because he's got to learn everything all over again. But not a team I'm going to put a lot of money behind. If anything, it'll be fades. They were 7-9 against the spread last year, 4-12 straight up, 2-4 straight up in the division, 3-3 against the spread in the division. Just like I said, another team that I'm going to be looking to fade.
So one other thing I meant to do yesterday, and I am going to do it today, is I'm going to just mention one guy on each team that I think I would target. Obviously, we're late in fantasy football drafts, but also in daily fantasy. You know, for the Cowboys, I would probably say it's Gallup. I expect him to make another leap this year. He had a really good year, especially the second half of the season. And for the Giants, and again, it's a health issue, but in daily fantasy, you're going to know, you know, if a guy, obviously, if he misses a game, you only have 1 week of him. Evan Engram has the potential to be, you know, the top tight end scoring guy in the league. If you look at his targets and yards in the games that he played last year, it's ridiculous. It's just the fact that you mentioned he's got to stay healthy, which he has not been able to do on a consistent basis. But Engram is probably going to be their most consistent target if it's not Barkley, at least leading in attempts and, you know, catches. So those would be the two guys for the first two teams I would definitely look at. But I'm totally with you on the Giants are at least a year away. And I might actually be looking, depending on how the season goes, is those one of those teams that I'm looking for teams playing the Giants to bet against them.
Yeah, and in my mind, a year away from being consistently thought of to be competitive. I mean, it's definitely a growing process for them. And again, it's perfectly fine. And this is a gambling podcast, so we're not here to necessarily bash teams. We're just looking for teams that we're going to make money off of. And I just don't see where you can make money off of the New York Football Giants. Switching over to their counterparts, we are going to the former Super Bowl champions. I know they still hold on to that thing. The Philadelphia Eagles. I'm a big Wentz homer. I was very high on him coming out. I am still holding on that he's going to give me 16 games of greatness. I still hold on to that one season when they got to the Super Bowl where he was basically almost in contention for MVP and then he got hurt. And it seems that he keeps getting hurt. And they're even going as far as to signing people like McCown and just letting him sit at home because they're going to probably need him at some point. Like, it's kind of embarrassing at this point.
What were they doing with the Jalen Hurts pick? I mean, you're somebody who I really value the way you think of these kind of things. And this is nothing against Jalen Hurts, the player, but, like, what are you doing with all the issues that they have? And you take a quarterback that is a project at best right now. You have Carson Wentz. Like, why are you using a second-round draft pick on him?
I have no idea what they were doing with Hurts, man. Hurts couldn't complete basic throws at Oklahoma in an offense where, honestly, if you can just do the bare minimum, you're gonna rack up like numbers, you know. And he held that team back more than he helped them. And I know he has his moments in Bama, but we're talking about NFL. You have to make throws. It doesn't matter. That's the thing that I even harp on about Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson can actually make a lot of throws that people consider NFL throws. He doesn't get asked to do that, and that's primarily because of the system that he's in. But Doug Peterson in this system is going to ask that. They're going to ask that you be able to make these throws, and I just don't think that Jalen Hurts is going to be able to make those throws on a consistent basis. And I'm a little disgusted at their entire draft, actually, but it is what it is. They have a vision, but I feel like they're taking steps. They do. They do, but I feel like they're taking steps back. And then there's the drama of Wentz consistently being hurt. Jason Peters had signed, I think, to play guard, but now they're moving him back out to tackle. And I'm going to be honest with you, I don't know if he can really play tackle anymore. He's really stiff and rigid and old. And you're going to have him at tackle that in a division where I just hyped up the Dallas Cowboys pass rush, and I'm going to hype up.
And your quarterback consistently is injured.
And I'm going to hype up the Washington Redskins pass rush too, because they've got some studs over there as well. And you're gonna have to play four games against two stud packages, and it doesn't look good, man. It doesn't look good for them. I think the ship has sailed a little. I was forcing things with the Eagles last year. They were 9-8 straight up on the whole season, 7-10 against the spread, 5-1 straight up in the division, but 3-3 against the spread. So, honestly, as optimistic as I was on them last year, I really shouldn't have been. And if I went back and looked at the money I invested in them, I'd probably end up losing a lot. But it's – you got to pick somebody in this division, per se, in regards of being the next good team. And Philly on paper, I guess, kind of feels that way because we don't know where we're going to get out of Washington. But to be honest with you, I'm not 100% sure they are the second best team in the division.
I agree.
Yeah. So I was going to say the one angle that I took last year that I might still look at this year was their defense was just so atrocious last year and giving up points left and right. I do like the pickup of my man from Detroit. God, I don't know why I keep drawing blanks on the podcast. The
cornerback, Darius Slay?
Darius Slay, yeah. The cornerback, Darius. I was about to say Dre Bly. But he did play in Detroit too. But Darius Slay, I do like that pickup. But I will say that the Eagles have a history of getting really good man-to-man cover corners at the wrong time. Nnamdi, Asante, like it's a trend. It is a trend.
Darby, they do have, if correct, Darby, I'm wrong, the first yeah, 3 weeks, a very easy schedule, correct? Like getting there, a very reasonable path to them being 3-0. I know they have a brutal stretch down, I think the last 3 or 4 weeks, but I think I've read a few places. Their first three games are very winnable. Maybe that's a gambling angle.
So people want to say that the first three games are winnable, But I think, and we can touch on this right now, I think that the Washington Redskins are a live dog in this game. They will be hosting the Eagles. It's +6 right now. I am really leaning towards taking those 6 points with the Redskins. And again, my angle is that the offensive line of the Philadelphia Eagles will struggle to protect Carson Wentz. And you got the Redskins, and then you got the Rams. Come on now. I mean, let's be real. If anything, I'm concerned he might not make it to week 3. I really am. And I might be wrong in my assessment of Peters, but most of these guys who play, we're talking left tackles, they don't move to guard. They retire, you know? Like, right. Once they can't play left tackle, they retire. Or they move to right tackle, maybe. But they don't go inside to guard. They retire. And you're talking about this guy said he came back to play guard. Now you're moving him back out to tackle? That's not very positive to me. So I'm concerned. I'm going to take the 6 with the okay. Redskins. And I'm probably going to put that on my pick 'em. I know people probably thinking I'm being crazy for taking – and I said Redskins, the Washington football team.
Yeah, I was going to say, but how many times we're going to get that wrong.
I know. But I'll be completely honest with you. It's the type of – they're going to be the type of team that will give Philly fits, because it's going to be an ugly game. And they're going to be physical because, well, their coach – I mean, how could you not be physical with him? They're going to be physical, and it's going to probably be low scoring and ugly. And again,
you have an amazing defensive line too, because I mean, they picked up Chase Young, and honestly, that wasn't even a need.
Yeah, but and you're talking about an offense that has potential to be able to control
the clock. Ton of talent.
Yeah, to control the clock. That's what we're talking about in my mind. That's what I'm looking at. Clock management against a team like Philly, who sputters a lot on the road and takes a lot of time to really get going and has trouble being consistent. And you're going to end up in a field position battle, and that plays right into what Washington ultimately is going to want to do. And I'm thinking probably looking at the under, and then also like an ugly game, but Washington covering, maybe outright winning, honestly. I really am that optimistic of this particular angle, and I'm just
not. Are you big time then on the Redskins? Because I think their over-under is 5.5. No, I'm just asking for the Redskins at 5.5 wins. Or would you lean more towards the over or the under for that total?
Let me look at their schedule and then their strength of schedule, because I think the Redskins are going to be a gritty team. I think they're going to be a fighting team. I don't see a lot of quit.
I think their defense is going to be actually really good. You know, they added Thomas Davis, who I know is getting older, but, you know, he's going to be a good veteran leader. They got a great, front seven. They got, you know, some decent corners and safeties. And, again, Ron Rivera, is it Rivera?
It's Rivera.
He is consistently, you know, improved the defenses to the teams that he's came to. And this is going to be one of the more talented units he's had.
Yeah, and Riverboat Ron, man, like I said, he can get these guys to play hard. Even if they're not good, they'll play hard. And that's something that Washington's never really had over the years. It's like when they've sucked, they've just been like, oh, we suck. There hasn't been much fight in D.C., and I think he'll at least bring some fight there. And they're young enough and hungry enough to want to change this culture. I could see some positive, but – They are the fourth or fifth easiest schedule.
And see, I would take the over then, because it's 5, correct? Or is it 5.5?
Yeah, and I think with the competent coach, they can win at least 6 games.
So just real quickly, because I didn't go over them, for the fantasy players, for the Eagles, I'm all in on Miles Sanders. Again, injury is a concern, obviously, but it took him a long time to get going last season. But I believe he was the top fantasy scorer at running back the last 4 weeks of the season. And then for the Redskins, you know, McLaren has really been slept on. Both last year, I believe it was like almost week 6 before he was owned by 90% of rosters and ESPN. He had 1,000 yards, 8 touchdowns. He has obviously experience with Haskins. If he ends up being the starter, if Alex Smith miraculously comes back, I think that's even better for him because of his accuracy. And I really do expect McLaurin to be, by the end of this season, one of those offensive receivers that everybody is going to want going into the 2021 season.
Yeah, McLaurin, or Scary Terry, however you want to call him. he's like an enigma to me, man. He's really interesting because he plays way bigger than what he really is.
Oh, yeah.
And he definitely wasn't like
Steve Smith-ish, right?
Yeah, a little bit, but not as aggressive in his demeanor, you know, like on the field for sure. But like he doesn't have that same kind of Steve Smith swag off the field. But like Steve Smith would fight you, man. Like even to this day, he really bought it. Like he don't care.
He attacks the ball the way he runs with it. Smith, he thinks he's Julio Jones size when he's not.
Yeah, and him and Haskins have some good chemistry. I would say I'm probably more optimistic on the Redskins than I am on any other team not named Dallas in that division. But that's not saying much. I'm not picking the Redskins to make the playoffs or anything like that. But I feel like this is a team that, again, my angle is going to be to consider taking as many points as I can get with them based off of their defense showing up and keeping them in games. Maybe looking at taking unders because we're going to probably see a slower paced offense with more running and less vertical passing. So we'll obviously still have to wait and see what we get. But on Sunday, I am still leaning towards taking the points with the Washington Redskins.
I think that's it for the NFC East, unless you got anything else you want to talk about.
No, other than the the Chiefs, man. God, the Chiefs.
We tried to tell y'all yesterday.
Well, I mean, everybody was scary. Everybody knew that, man. Nobody,
but they didn't. I've heard a lot of people saying, you know, and I mean, you even made the point yesterday. It's hard to repeat, and I get that.
It is, but like
this
I said,
team this is so team. Loaded.
Yep. This is if there was a team that I could look at and was like, you know what, they could be the next dynasty. And I said that last year before they even won the Super Bowl and everybody flipped out. But I'm like, dude, it's literally all there. So we'll probably talk about them a lot this year.
Defenses look good in this game.
Yeah, but that's because of Texas offense.
That's fair.
Okay. That's fair. Going to the NFC West, we will start with
best division in football?
No.
No? Who do you have?
No, I think that the NFC North will be the best division in football this year.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. It's shocking. Yeah, I can't believe I said it either. But the only thing holding them back is that the Chicago Bears have a running back at quarterback. Other than that, they would be one of the more interesting divisions for sure. I've seen a lot of positivity about the North, and we'll get to that when we switch over. But I am high on the Arizona Cardinals. Higher than what most people probably are. I think Arizona is a sneaky team against the spread this year. Last year they were 9-6-1 against the spread, which is actually not bad at all for a team that only won 5 games. They covered 9. That's pretty good. They were 1-5 straight up in the division. 2-3-1 against the spread in the division. But I think that this year we'll see something more positive. I can see that, like, I'm as highly optimistic as saying that Chase said that they could contend for the division. I don't think it's that. I don't think we're there yet, but they will be disruptive in our division this year, I think, for sure. And it's not going to be, they're not going to be the team. And this has nothing to do with them picking up Hopkins. It's just, I think, their natural transition with Kyler Murray and Cliff at the helm again. They're not going to be a team that when you see them on the schedule, you're going to mark that as a win. You're going to have to work. And I think we're going to see the offense that Cliff has going on. I don't want to call it the air raid. I feel like that's offensive at this level, but it's basically a variation of the air raid. But we're gonna see this evolve a little bit more with somebody steady like Hopkins. And then the defense is really athletic and underrated. and I think they're going to fly. I think Simmons is going to be a huge boost, and they're going to probably have him around the line of scrimmage. And
they were so bad against tight ends last year, and hopefully like Kittles.
A dude at 6'4", 238, and got his kind of, like, athletic measurements, oh, for sure is going to help. Simmons is a beast, man. He is a beast. He's got some really good intangibles. Like, it's literally a safety in a linebacker's body with a hybrid mentality, too. Like, it's just – he just stands out on film, man. It was so much fun to watch, and I'm really hyped to see him in my division, although I'm also still – sadly disgusted that the damn division gets some of the best defensive players, and it doesn't help that my offensive players, especially our skill position players, stay hurt.
It's the way I feel in the NFC South about quarterbacks. It seems like we just constantly, you know, it's either number one picks or, you know, like now Brady, you know, Breeze came over. It's insane. Don't you think Cliff, too, deserves a lot of credit last year for he came in, you know, he had the offense that he wanted to run. It didn't work. And he audibled, and he went to a more run-based offense. They really, you know, ran it down people's throats with guys like Kenyon Drake and Chase Edmonds. And it does make me believe that he's going to continue to open it up more and find that balance. But he's already proven as a young coach that he will adapt, and he doesn't have the ego to where, you know, his system is the only way, and he's going to do whatever it is to get the most out of his team.
Yeah, knowing what I know about Cliff and following him when he was at Texas Tech and knowing, like, where he comes from as far as his coaching tree, like, he's an innovator, man. Like, all those guys that are air raid-based, they're innovative offensive minds. Now, they're known and respected for the aerial attack, but all those guys can design plays that can get guys the ball and get their playmakers to have an impact in the game. And if that playmaker happens to be a running back, they can definitely draw up something. And that's what we saw last year. And I mean, kudos to him. Kudos to their draft. Also just, you know, sticking to the idea that we need to boost this defense. We've got the money spent for our offense, but we really need to put some time into this defense. And they've got some athletes on defense. Like I said, Simmons highlights it. But then they also went out and picked up Josh Jones, a 6'5", 319-pound tackle, which is a mammoth. And I mean, he wasn't my favorite tackle, but just his measurements and his skill set on film, you could definitely see he's somebody that you could definitely work with. I think, again, we're going to get a competitive Arizona team. My angle for taking them is going to be early and often taking points with them in situations where they're dogs by more than a touchdown, especially in the division. So I think I want to say we were 8 points. Oh, all right, 7 now. I want to say it opened at 8, and I think that's too high. I'll be honest with you. I think 7 is too high with us taking on the Cardinals. I really think, like, we have
it. Didn't they play the Niners tough twice last
year? Yeah, I was going to say, it's not a team that we really – like, we don't do well against our scrambling quarterbacks in our division. Case in point, Russell Wilson. I don't know why. We just don't. We just can't stop. If you run anywhere outside the NFC West, we can get you. But if you happen to be an NFC West scrambling quarterback, we can't really contain you. So I think that's a tough game not to take the points. And I'm speaking as a 49er fan, but we're really limited on skill position. You might argue right now our best offensive weapon is an unproven kid from Arizona State. I love our coach, and I know what we're capable of, and he's a great innovator too, but it's asking a lot to produce or replicate what he did last year with the limited offensive options. So I'm going to take my points with the Cardinals this weekend. I can't believe I'm saying this as a fan, but yeah, I might even go as far as to put that on my list too. I'm already one in on my pick'ems, because I took the Chiefs tonight. So
that was a good pick.
Yeah, so I'm starting out 1-0, but yeah, again.
So for the Cardinals, the fantasy guy that I would look out for, you know, the running back situation, it's just to me scary because I think that they're going to have a running back have a big year. Who it is, who knows? If you look at all the different guys that they had being the lead dog, Chase Edmonds had a couple multi games where he went over 100 yards. You know, obviously you had David Johnson at the beginning of the season, and Kenyon Drake killed it near the end. So the guy that I'm looking at, and I keep telling people this, is DeAndre Hopkins. He is actually going right now, I think it's like wide receiver 7 or 8. So I'm assuming that means on DraftKings, he's going to be around the same, you know, rate for daily fantasy. And look at the quarterbacks that he had success with before Deshaun Watson. No offense to Bill O'Brien. I don't think he's quite the offensive genius that Cliff Kingsbury is. I expect a really big year for DeAndre Hopkins. And I think you can kind of get him for a steal if you have not had your fantasy draft yet, because I think he's going to end up being a top three receiver. And right now you're getting to draft him in that 7 to 8 range.
What about Christian Kirk, man? Because I feel like he's going to
eat. He burnt me so bad last year that it's honestly
finally,
a little
bit. But he's finally got a compliment to his speed, though, because
I completely agree. It just, you know how it is in fantasy. You'll have a guy that you go all in, and I did with him last year. I think I drafted him in 2 or 3 leagues, and he just, I mean, it wasn't just the fact that he was bad. He had games where he played the entire game and had 0-1 catches. I could totally see him being a breakout player. I can't get burnt 2 years in a row. It reminds me too much of what was the tight end? Jared Cook, who just recently started having a few relevant seasons. But Jared Cook was that guy that I kept taking over and over again because of his big talent and stuff, and he just never did anything. But I totally see what you're saying there.
Yeah, and Jared Cook, yeah, he was definitely disappointed. I mean, he was huge, man. Huge body tight end. You would think he would definitely be a whole lot better than what he was. Going into the next team in the NFC West, another team I'm not really that high on, but some people are, the Los Angeles Rams. I don't really know what to make of the Rams other than I'm always going to respect Aaron Donald. He's an absolute monster. But other than that, I'm not big on Goff. McVay kind of left some. I mean, all right, let's put it this way: me and Sean McVay have a standing beef for how he handled the Super Bowl against Belichick.
And by I don't kissing care
what,
his ass.
Yeah, I don't care what nobody says. He pulled punches, man. Like that was not the Sean McVay. And I know Gurley was hurt and stuff like that, but he was literally
– he coached not to lose.
Yeah, he was literally doing things that was playing right into Belichick's hands. And I'm like, dude, I mean, Bill's not even trying at this point. Like, you're winning the game for him. So, I like I said, I got a standing beef. But the Rams were very good against the spread last year, going 11-5 against the spread and going 5-1 against the spread in their division. So – all that stuff I said about the Cowboys earlier, maybe that's why the line's moving more towards the Rams, because sharps are like, hey, look, this is a team that was really good against the spread, coming into a spot that is probably more favorable for them, being at home and hosting a team.
And the new stadium, too, right?
Yeah.
I believe.
Yeah, new stadium, but being at home hosting a team with the system that they're going to have to pick up and learn right now. They're probably people, the smart ones, the sharps, are probably more backing the trend. And that's a healthy trend, man. 11-5 against the spread, that's really good. Really, really good, considering that they only won 9 games.
Mm-hmm.
So,
they had a brutal schedule last year.
Yeah, and they also, their defense is also a little overrated after you get past.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Aaron Donald, that's what happened.
Donald, yeah.
And they lost Fowler.
And that, okay, so that was the Rams prior to McVay getting there, even with the Jeff Fisher days. Like, the defense was Aaron Donald, and then if you could just get past Aaron Donald, you had a field day, whether it's in the air or on the ground. Like, literally, you could do whatever you wanted against that defense if you could just get past that line of scrimmage. And I think that's probably what they're going to look like this year. So with that being said, I'm going to probably target the angle of maybe opposing teams playing the Rams over. Just to see, because again, the offense is going to be three and out a lot because of Jared Goff and his inaccuracy. But you're going to get possessions. You're going to get a quicker pace just because of how McVay likes to run the offense anyway. So you're going to get opportunities for overs. You just have to make sure you're calculated about it.
Is Jalen Ramsey going to be the guy that they gave up so much for? Because don't you agree that if Jalen Ramsey is the corner that he was in Jacksonville, now their defense has two of arguably the biggest difference makers in the NFL on the defensive side on the same unit, and maybe now you could see the people that are so pro the Rams this year, mostly because of their defense, maybe they are going to be onto something there.
Typically when you pay guys, they don't all right, put it this way. And when you do pay them, especially cornerbacks, they'll give you one good year, but it won't be anything like the year that they needed the money.
Right.
But maybe Jalen's different because
he is waiting on a big ticket extension, I believe. So
I was like, I was gonna say, because he didn't I said she because I'll always be making fun of him, calling him sassy. But he didn't really do much last year.
Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah. So
especially what he was traded for.
And I think some of that too was he was hurt too. But we'll see. I don't know that. I guess if you factor in how Aaron Donald dominates, how Jalen Ramsey when he was at his peak, which was very short, but when he was peak Jalen Ramsey, he locked down that side of the field. That would make it a very tough defense that you probably have to attack in a specific way. But I don't really think that it makes them a playoff team, if you give
up. Oh, no. Yeah, I agree. So for fantasy purposes, don't overthink this. There's two guys, actually, that I want to mention. Well, really three that are all kind of, in my opinion, undervalued. It's their receiving trio. You have Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, and Tyler Higbee. Woods and Kupp have both put up really good numbers under McVay year after year. Obviously you're a little concerned about golf, but regardless, Kupp has been incredible. I think if it wasn't for the injury last year, he might have been the number one receiver in football and yards. And then Higbee, he had 69 receptions. I believe it was 55 of those came in the last five games. They would be stupid not to go back to that. Well, I've seen some, articles and stuff saying, well, I don't know if they're going to use him as much of a weapon as they did late in the season because they had some injuries and stuff. They were winning late in the season. He was a big reason for that. And he's a better blocker than Everett, who will be back. I'm high on all three of those guys, particularly because, again, they're not going at the value that they should be and at that point in the draft.
Yeah. you're dealing with the offensive innovator. Find whatever he likes, whatever's working, and then just hammer it. Because, again, he's going to find a way to move the ball regardless of how limited his quarterback is. Speaking of quarterbacks being limited, San Francisco 49ers.
Hey, do you believe there will be a Super Bowl hangover?
Oh, yeah, for sure. There's usually a Super Bowl hangover. We just got to stay healthy. We just got to stay healthy, and we can't do that. I mean.
So how serious is the injury to Debo?
Oh, Debo will be – it's a foot injury.
Is the foot surgery head correct?
Yeah, he's supposed to be back in October, but the thing about a foot injury and things like that, because like your foot and your hand, those bones, man, like it's different because like they can go in, they can screw and do all kind of stuff, but all it takes is one step or one person to hit it a certain way, and then you're gonna be back in pain again. So I mean, he's tough, man. He's like our new Anquan Boldin, so I don't expect him to be out any longer than he has to be. But how effective he's going to be when he comes back, it just matters on how much they shoot him up with pain meds, I think. I'm very excited about Kinlaw. I think he's going to be a monster for us. I think he's going to be what Buckner was, but probably not as consistent. But he's pretty, I mean, Buckner's probably like a couple inches taller, but size wise, 6'5", 324 in the middle, man. Got Bosa on one side, going to have Ford on the other side. We should still have a pretty solid defense. I expect some drop off from our secondary. I think they played out of their minds last year. But with that being said, I mean, this team is still a playoff contender, has to be a playoff contender. I don't think we're going to go 15-4 on our way to a Super Bowl appearance, but we have to make the playoffs. We have to contend for the division, if not outright win the division. And we've got to show up when we do get into the playoffs this year.
You got a great young coach. You have a great young roster. Obviously, you got the Super Bowl hangover. And, you know, the issue would be the strength of their division. But with the extra playoff seed, I just don't see them missing the playoffs unless they have some big injuries or Garoppolo, you know, and I know this would be a nightmare for you, but takes a step backwards. I actually think he's going to play better this year. I think they kind of figured out what his strengths and weaknesses are. And I see the Niners going again 9-7, 10-6, and the NFC and the AFC with that extra playoff spot, that should get you into the playoffs.
Yeah, and we were 11-7 against the spread, 11-7-1 against the spread, 15-4 straight up, 5-1 straight up in the division, 2-3-1 against the spread in the division. And then that would be my angle and part of what I was getting at when we host Arizona. We're not that good against the spread in the division. And typically those spreads are like touchdowns, like 6.5, 7.5, 7, things like that. Like, we don't really cover that number. We tend to beat teams by 3 or 4 or just outright lose in some BS to the Seahawks. That's typically how our division games go. I will say that I think the team we do the best against in the division is the Rams. And that's just from my personal knowledge. But I would be wary of jumping on the against the spread bandwagon of the 49ers this year. I actually would probably look into doing some unders early on until we get these receivers back. Because I don't know if we're going to put too much on Jimmy, man. I really don't. I really think that we're going to try to run the ball a little bit more. And I'm extremely excited about Trent Williams. And the only reason why I'm high on Joey Bosa is because Bosa has to go against Trent Williams every day in practice. and I mean, and they've been working each other.
That's fair.
Yeah, I've seen the videos, man. Williams looks like he's in tip-top shape and good Pro Bowl form again still. Like, it hasn't been any lulls. And then, obviously, Nick Bosa is working him and I'm not going to lie, a lot of what I see, Trent is getting the best of Bosa, and Bosa admits it online, too. He's not ashamed of it.
Let me ask you a fantasy question.
Yeah.
Because you know this team more than most. Are we going to again see the three-headed monster where, you know, they're almost like the Pats, what back you want to play? Because, I mean, Mozart had such a great playoff run last year, but you got McKinnon coming back, correct? Like, he is healthy now. You still have Tevin Coleman. Do you think that this is one of those deals where week to week it could be a different guy? Like, you're going to run it a lot. You just don't know who it's going to be, you know, getting the rock week in and week out.
No, I mean, they paid Moisture, man. I mean, he did
all
that.
So you think he will be more of a number one running back this year?
Yeah, he should be. I mean, we got rid of Breida. They let him go. So, yeah, I don't see why not. He's going to be the feature back. And I still expect to see the same creativity that Kyle had last year, and using motion to create running lanes and passing lanes. I just need for Jimmy to make sure he executes when those passing lanes open. But yeah, I'm not like I said, the Super Bowl hangover, I'm thinking like a 2-3 game difference, man. So still 10 wins.
My Falcons did. They went 10-6, snuck in as a wild card.
Yeah. But yeah, like I said, the angle would be probably divisional fates, depending on the spread. Like I said, anything over a touchdown in our division, the 49ers do not need to be favored over anybody in that division. And that includes the Arizona Cardinals. They do not need to be favored more than a touchdown over anybody in that division. So if you see lines like that, jump on it. The last team is the team that I picked preseason to win the division, because it just seems like the type of shit that would happen with the Seahawks. But the Seattle Seahawks, they're always a thorn in our side, but not everyone.
Kind of revamp the defense, right, with Adams and Irvin. And...
Yeah. But it ain't the Legion of Boom, man. So, like, they add these names, but they won't ever have that type of defense again, man.
I agree, but don't you think Adams will really help shore up a lot of their issues? I mean, he's one of the best safeties in football, don't you think?
Yeah, but what does he help shoring up? What are we doing? What offense are they shoring up against? The Cardinals probably the best offense on paper.
Well, I'm right saying that they got gashed last year by, teams. And, he's going to be able to come up in the box and help with that.
I bet you he won't come up there too often. Not against this division, because the power game is gone now. It's a whole lot of misdirection and stuff. He's probably going to be.
That's fair.
Yeah, it's just a different game with McVay and Kyle. If you come up too close and put too many in the box, all it takes is one.
Oh, you're cut. Right. All three of their coaches aren't there.
Yeah, and Kingsbury too. That's just basically what they do. Like, they'll make you pay if you load the box, and they can
and
do
you
it.
Have Seattle quick. Running it 60 times a game with arguably the best quarterback in the league. I mean, are they going to finally kind of let Russell throw it this year, or do you think it's going to be the same formula where it's a little maddening, where they just seem to kind of run it up the gut a lot?
Well, I mean, Russ gets free reign. I think he trusts his receivers more this year. I think if you're going to highlight somebody, you talk about Big Swole.
Oh, Metcalf's going to have He would be my fantasy player on this team for sure. I think he's a number one receiver by the end of the year. I know Lockett's been really good. I think they're going to be basically co-number one receivers, but – I mean, Metcalf had, I believe, 9 or 10 touchdowns last year. He's such a big, strong dude. He reminds me a lot of Julio, actually, in the way that he kind of physically dominates guys. And it's why it's so infuriating for me as a Falcons fan that Julio Jones doesn't get in the end zone more to score touchdowns, because you see Metcalf last year getting a lot of his touchdown catches in the red zone. I expect him to have another big year.
Yeah, and I think with all that being done, I'm more optimistic of them. I wouldn't call it opening up the offense, because they don't like
sound what they do.
Yeah, they've got a quarterback that can improvise, and they just basically give him a blank canvas and say make it happen, and that's what he does.
Right.
I don't think they'll change that up any kind of way. I would hope that they would be able to try to replicate some of that beast mode style offense, just because it just gave them a pretty good balance. But they were 12-6 straight up last year, 8-8-2 against the spread, 3-3 in the division straight up, and then 2-4 against the spread in the division. I would say, even though they've added people to the defense, I think there's still going to be similar struggles. They lost Clowney, and he's one of the best run-stopping defensive ends in the game. I don't know how they're going to fix that. I think they still get attacked the same way, even though Adams is in. And so with that being said, I'm going to take an angle of playing a lot of Seahawks overs. They love to score late, love to score garbage touchdowns. So, Russell Wilson, to me, is when people talk garbage points, he's the poster child for that, to me. So I'm all over the Seahawks to kind of be a team that you can bet on to get the
over. What do you think about Wilson at 12-1 to be the MVP? That's one of my favorite plays. I think he's just reached the point in his career where, A, he's got the writers and stuff on his side, where I think that they respect him enough that if it's a close race, I could see them voting for him because he's kind of earned it at this point. And at 12-1, I think he's an interesting pick because he's got those better receivers this year. I think he may throw a little bit more. I could totally see Russell ended up being the MVP. And 12-1, I kind of like those odds.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's worth a flyer. 12-1 on a guy who people were like, how did he not get consideration like pretty much at all throughout his career? I think that's a fair value to drop something on early on. Switching to the NFC,
the best North. Division in football.
Yep. Huh. Yep.
I'm ready to hear this.
All right. So I think the NFC North is going to be the best division in football because between the Vikings, the Packers, the Lions, and the Bears, you can't tell me who's definitively the best team in that division. I can make an argument for all the teams, honestly.
Don't tell me the Bears. You can't make the argument with
you
that
You can make
guy.
An argument for the
no,
Bears.
No, you
can't. You
cannot.
Can't make an argument for the Bears.
No, come on,
You can't
dude.
Make an argument for the Bears.
With Mitchell Trubisky as their quarterback.
Yup, even with sorry old Mitch Trubisky as their quarterback, you can make an argument.
That's where you lost me. I understand. Like, I actually do think the Lions have a chance to legitimately win the division. I just, if Mitchell Trubisky is their quarterback, I don't see any way that the Bears win the division, as much talent as they have. And I know that's what you're going to say, and they do, but, I mean, when you got Stafford, Rodgers, and, you know, I hate to even put, you know, Cousins in the same class, but Kirk Cousins and then Mitchell Trubisky, I just don't see them coming out on top in that division with everything else fairly equal when, you know, it's like bringing a rock to a gunfight.
The Chicago Bears were 4-2 straight up in their division last year.
I get that.
They were actually better in their division, obviously better, way better in their division than they were outside. They were 8-8 overall straight up and 4-2 within the division. It's more of a familiarity thing, man. Like, yeah, they struggled outside of their division, but most of their out-of-division games are at home this year, and they typically play pretty well.
What's their strength of schedule?
Their strength of schedule is Chicago is number 13.
Okay.
So they're on the right side. I also wholeheartedly believe that Trubisky won't be the quarterback for the whole season.
So now that, you can convince me. Now yeah. You start talking about that, I'm listening.
Yeah, so that's part of my thing. But I would say the angle for the Bears would be to look at them winning straight up in their division. I still think they're going to be a formidable opponent within the division, and that you're going to get them just primarily because Trubisky is so trash. You're going to be getting them probably as a dog a lot of times, and there's potential for outright payment on them. And that's, I think that's what I did.
And think about Quinn and Khalil Mack together on the same front. I mean, if he plays like he did last year, as you were saying, that now that defense might get back to that 2018 defense, which last year's wasn't bad, but 2018 was just out of this world.
Yeah, and again, like, I really think you have to respect the fact that within their division, they're pretty solid. So they're at Detroit in their first game. I'm not going to be super high on them on the road much. I would probably take a more wait-and-see approach, but it's these primetime games because I'm on record as saying Khalil Mack shows up for primetime games like no other. Mm-hmm. And I think that if we can get them on a Monday night, a Sunday night, Thursday night at home, close to like a 2-point favorite or a field goal favorite or even an outright underdog, that's when you really take a shot at the Chicago Bears. Now, right now they're sitting at +3. Against the Lions. Again, with that pass rush, if I could get Mac to show up consistently. Like I feel like he plays when the lights are bright. It would definitely be a formidable opponent, but I'm probably gonna take the Lions in this first game. Just because, like I said, home field. And that's just about it. Home field in the division, doesn't matter if the fans are there or not. Home field is still going to be home field for a lot of people. It's not like the Lions were selling out crowds anyway. So the familiarity with teams, especially within the division, I think it really helps the Lions in that particular spot. So I'm probably going to lean to the Lions. But I'm still going to be on the Bears all year long looking for those spots where I can get some underdog money from them.
I like that. The Bears, guy to watch for fantasy purposes for me is Anthony Miller. He's sort of the forgotten receiver on their roster. He didn't have a great year last year. He had the 52 catches, 656 yards, two touchdowns. People remember in 2018, his rookie year, I think he had seven touchdowns, which kind of burst onto the scene. They have been raving about him in training camp, and he is a speedster. Now, again, I hope Foles is the quarterback and not Trubisky, because that's a concern, but I could see Miller definitely being a breakout candidate. And if we're talking about the Lions, do not forget how good Matthew Stafford is at quarterback. I know that in the last two drafts that I've done, you get Stafford as late as the second or third to last round. I believe that he has going to have a very good year, and it needs to be said that, like, guys like Marvin Jones, he was the 12th best receiver in fantasy football up until the point that Stafford got hurt last year. Obviously had a big fall off after that. The tight end is back this year after being injured, and they have several good running backs, actually, with Johnson, DeAndre Swift from Georgia. I'm with you that I actually think the Lions, especially now that they've got rid of Matt Patricia, they could be really a team to surprise you, and that would be one of the teams, if you're looking for a sleeper to make the playoff odds, I would look at. I don't know what the exact odds are, but again, with that extra team, I could see the Lions going 9-7 and sneaking into the playoffs.
Yeah, the Lions have always been the team that I've liked to bet, but primarily on like first half games, especially when they're at home, they usually play pretty well in the first half. They start pretty quick. But last year, I mean, you could write off most of last year because Stafford wasn't playing. When Stafford plays, they are a better team against the spread, and things are a little different. I'm not sure what to make of the offense, but I do expect this defense to still be solid. I like Kakuta a lot, so I don't think they'll miss Darius Slay too much, and he should be able to essentially wind up doing all the things that Slay could do for that defense.
They also signed Desmond Trufant, who is a Falcons fan. He is a serviceable starting cornerback, like not a superstar cornerback, but he will also help them out.
Yeah, and so I'm very optimistic of the Lions and them being competitive, and I'm looking at the angle of really supporting them when they are the home team. Even in games like I said, as long as it's not anything too crazy, I don't think a 3-point spread is crazy at all. But in this position, taking on a division rival that you're familiar with, knowing how limited Mitch Trubisky is, it should be fine for them to get this to pull this off on Sunday, and then look to maybe take advantage of the Bears at their first home game or something like that. As an underdog to kind of recoup any money that you might have lost if you decided to fade the Lions. So with that being said, I think we got the Packers next.
By the way, the Chiefs did hit the over, which we talked about, and yep, they covered. So we're off to a good start.
Yeah, and like I told the guy, I was like, look, hey, my co-host likes it. I mean, why not? I'm not like tripping off of it for sure, because again, we're talking about a team that can put up 35 points on anybody in the snow, in the wind, during a hurricane. It doesn't matter. But the Green Bay Packers are a team that I'm always critical of. I'm not a big Aaron Rodgers fan.
Are you concerned that it's a legit drop-off? Like, he is reaching that point where it's not just, you know, the coaching staff. It's not just, you know, drops. He is at that point where we know with these quarterbacks, typically it ends quick. Are we getting, you know, close to the point where Rodgers is, you know, not even one of the better quarterbacks in the league?
Yes and no, because people ultimately are still going to look at their record, and they went 14-4 last year. As long as he keeps winning football games, people are going to keep making excuses for Aaron Rodgers.
But wasn't that Aaron Jones? I mean, when you said that was the defense and really Jones that led that, not
Jones in the defense for sure did most of the legwork. But I mean, it's still the NFL. It's a quarterback
league. Yeah.
So he's ultimately still going to get all the credit. And so with that being said, I don't know if I'm that high on them this year, but one of the things about the Packers is that they always find a way to compete, and I'm worried about the chemistry between the coach and the quarterback, and I'm not too concerned. If they put in Jordan Love, they ain't going nowhere. I already know that. But like, their draft wasn't that good. Rodgers already had lost a whole lot around them. It's just not.
And he's salty about them drafting his replacement when he needed, you know, assistance.
Yeah. It's just not a healthy situation, if you ask me. But I'll still probably find a way to bet them. They were 6-0 in their division straight up, 4-2 against the spread.
And they were 8-1 in one score games last year. We talked about the Chargers. It's almost impossible to go 2-9. It's really difficult to go 8-1. And if the games are that close, they're probably not going to have nearly as good of a record this year in those games.
Yeah. So, I guess my angle with the Packers would be to look at how they do in their division. And then they had a lot of 3-point spreads last year, man. Like, a lot. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So 7 of their games were 3-point spreads. And they covered 1, 2. They covered like 4 of them, 4 or 5. So in these tight games, I mean, honestly, their weakness has always been teams with defensive fronts that don't need to throw linebackers at them, because it makes Aaron Rodgers hold on to the ball even longer, and then he gets uncomfortable because he's still waiting for people to get open, and he's got pressure on him, and there's like,
he's gonna be waiting with their receiving core. I mean, obviously they have Adams, but I mean, outside of that, I'm shocked that they, you know, it's almost Patriot type level with Brady. They just don't seem committed to get him any other receivers.
Yeah. So I'm not putting them on the list of teams I'm looking to fade. I'm actually just going to look for value in small lines on them. So the Packers have the Vikings, and here we are, small line +2.5.
Visiting
Minnesota. I think Minnesota fits the bill of a team that's got enough up front that they would give the Packers fits without having to send linebackers too much. And it's the first game. I'm going to go ahead and take the Vikings.
I'm with you there. The Vikings are who I have winning this excuse me, division as well. But I like them this week at home.
Yeah, so expect the Packers to still win 10 to 11 games, probably. I think I said that in the group, that they're still going to be the sorriest 10-11 win team in the league. I mean, that's what they were.
You called it all last year. I got to give you credit. Like, right up to that Niners game, I was a little nervous. You told me, don't worry, the Packers are trash. Yep. And they were exposed. I mean, it was really the toughest game they had in 3 months since their last loss to the Niners, and they were exposed again.
Yep. So I don't expect that to change. I think that's just the DNA or the blueprint to beating them. Minnesota, I think we're both high on Minnesota. I think
I'm a lot very of high on Minnesota.
I mean, I haven't seen anybody really say anything negative about Minnesota. They love their draft. They love their offseason moves. They love their team. I like Zimmer. I think he's a good coach. He plays.
I think Cousins has been really good the last couple of years. Like, I know he catches a lot of flack, but I think it's going to help getting rid of Diggs. It's going to be, you know, an addition by subtraction, because Diggs was somebody who was very vocal about wanting the football. I think Cousins tended to sort of force it to him some, and I don't think you're going to see that as much this year.
Yeah, and Cousins is a chump, but yep. I like Kirk Cousins, though, because he typically shows up in games that are not Monday night. Like, his Monday night football trend, oh my God, it is awful. I don't think he's ever won a Monday night game. I think that's still a thing.
No, that is definitely still a thing.
Yeah, so look, obviously keep hitting that. Look for that if that's out there. 11-7 last year, straight up, 10-8 against the spread, 2-4 in the division, straight up, 3-3 against the spread. I expect that to change a lot this year. More so the straight up. I can see them being 4-2, maybe 5-1, depending on what we get out of the Lions and the Bears. But it should be a competitive division with the Vikings coming out on top, and defense still being as good as advertised, and the offense probably being more comfortable without having Diggs in Kirk Cousins' ear. But everything in my mind is optimistic about them, and I'm looking for them to cover Sunday.
And just for the fantasy purposes, I didn't mention this for the Packers. It's Aaron Jones. You saw the year he had last year. I don't think he's going to have quite the year this year, but the Packers figured out last year their best key to winning is to feed the rock to Aaron Jones, run play action, you know, speed up the game in that purpose. They're going to do that again. He's a really good play. And then for the Vikings, I really like Adam Thielen this year. He's sort of been a forgotten guy. You know, he had all these great years with Diggs on the opposite side. I know they picked up Jefferson, the rookie, but I think Thielen's going to get a majority of those targets that were going to go to Diggs, and he's going to be a true number one receiver again this year like he was in 2018.
Yep. So, again, anybody listening, a team you want to target or look into targeting, Minnesota Vikings for sure. I would say if we went back over the divisions, Cowboys is a team you want to target. The Seahawks is a team you want to target. And then the Vikings is a team you want to target from angle perspective. So keep that in mind. Going into the NFC South,
yeah, we
actually have the Atlanta Falcons up first.
Yes,
so
sir.
The Atlanta Falcons, I'm not a big fan of the Falcons on the road.
It's been what?
That way. Yeah, it's been that way for me for a while now. But I think a lot of it is just people have a hard time letting go what they see when Atlanta plays bad. It's like their bad games are just really, really bad. It's like stuff that you just can't forget.
Particularly so on the road.
Yeah, so you don't want to give them credit for being better than what they are against the number. But last year they were 7-8-1 against the spread, but it was 4-2 in the division straight up. 4-2 against the spread in the division, which
remember,
is really
they were
good.
1-6 last year to start the season.
Yeah, they started out so poorly, but a lot of that is due to injuries as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if the Falcons are going to move up, move down. I just know that the teams like the Saints and the Buccaneers got a lot better. So that's basically what they're going to be fighting for, is trying to beat Brady and Breeze. It's like Matt Ryan's.
You don't think the Falcons got a lot better, though, too?
No, I don't think they got a lot better.
Really?
No, I don't.
Defense is going to be much better. And that was the big issue last year. I mean, they still scored over 30 points a game. They signed Dante Fowler. They drafted Terrell. And I really love Davidson from Auburn. I think he's going to help give them some toughness and physicality up front.
The problem is that y'all can never stay healthy. That's why I'm like, no. Let me see y'all get through 4 or 5 games without season-ending injuries to key secondary people.
No,
and I'll be more optimistic. Because I think Quinn.
Keanu Neal, Witherspoon, yeah, we've had some really bad luck.
Yeah, what's always hurt them is that Quinn's system is very dependent on his safeties. And those safeties always get hurt, man. And once the safety goes down, it's like a domino effect. And they end up losing a rusher. And they end up losing an interior lineman. And they end up losing a linebacker. And then you got a makeshift defense, and it just hurts. Matt Ryan's limitations. I don't think he is who he is at this point in his career. He's good enough to win football games, and with the right offensive
coordinator. Should have been good enough to win a Super Bowl. Thanks a lot, Shanahan.
I was going to say, in the right offensive coordinator, he's good enough to get you even further. But that window's closing. And it's closing.
I agree. That's why this is a big year for them. I'm full discretion, a big Falcons fan, so this is partly with the Falcons hat on. But I really do believe if Todd Gurley stays healthy, and that's a big if, that they're going to be explosive, like just below the explosiveness that they were the year they went to the Super Bowl. I think he's going to bring a whole nother factor to their offense. Calvin Ridley is their fantasy player that I would watch out for this year. His route running is fantastic. They say he has a much better grasp of the offense and the playbook in year three. Ryan is more comfortable with him, so he was the guy I would target. I actually like the Hayden Hurst signing or trade at tight end. As somebody who watched Hooper week in and week out, Hooper was overrated. He dropped a ton of big passes, always at the worst time. So I don't think Hurst is going to be that big of a downgrade. It could potentially even be a positive. And then I just look at what the defense did the last 7 weeks of last season. Allen made a very valid point that they've got to stay healthy, but you can't control that going into it. And the other thing is, I know you're saying that Ryan's on the back end of his career. That's very fair. But the other two good teams in the NFC South, you can't tell me that Drew Brees and Tom Brady aren't closer to their back end of their career than Matt Ryan. So that gives me optimism that this could be the Falcons' year. I think the NFC as a whole is down a little bit. And, in a perfect world, we make the Super Bowl. Somehow the Kansas City Chiefs do not get there, and we have a fighter's chance to beat one of those teams. But I really believe the Falcons are going to win 9-10 games this year. They're going to get into the playoffs. And I think the NFC South is going to be very competitive with the exception of Carolina. And so I don't think there's going to be a team with 12, 13 wins in the NFC South, because the out of division schedule is pretty brutal for the NFC South this year as well.
I think the Bucs are winning the division.
You would, you freaking Tom Brady homer.
But I'm gonna put all the teams together, and I'm gonna say I think the Falcons will be better than they were last year record wise. I think the Saints will be worse than they were last year record wise, and obviously the Buccaneers should go up, and then the Panthers will probably stay the same. And so the drop for the Saints is really the question: how far do they drop? I will agree that Breeze's limitations with his age are showing more than Brady and Matt Ryan. And I think part of that is just because of how he throws the ball and the fact that he's not really that big. I've got clips of me asking last year in maybe right before they played the 49ers, like, what happened to the seam routes? What happened to the passes? Why is he not letting the ball go, And a lot of that is just because, they have to – I mean, people complain about Michael Thomas and how he catches the ball, like, 3 yards from the line of scrimmage.
They need it. That's about all he can do.
Yeah, it's a lot of it is just because the quarterback didn't know, man. But
so do you think there's 0% chance – or not zero, let's say. It's very unlikely – that this Bucs season ends up being a disaster, because I'm with you. I actually think that Brady will have a good year. I think the Bucs are going to be, in contention for a playoff spot, win the division. But, I mean, he is, 44, 45 years old. He's going to a new team, a new system. It's an offensive coordinator that likes to push it down the field. And they're Tampa Bay, which is kind of a, I know they had the one Super Bowl, but historically they're losers. So I do sort of wonder if this could go the other way.
I think Bruce Arians is, he's a great offensive mind. Like, the guy knows football, knows the game. Tom Brady is older, and I do question how the hell is he still playing. But modern medicine and people who take care of their bodies, like, a lot of these, the apex athletes are finding a way to push boundaries. LeBron James is one of them. He pushes boundaries. Like, the way he moves and night in, night out, when he does play, the fact that he's still playing at a high level athletically at this age with all the mileage on his body is a testament to how much he takes care of himself. Tom Brady is kind of the same way. He takes care of himself. Yeah, he did show that his arm was declining a little, but I don't think Bruce and them would take that chance with him if he couldn't make the throws in the offense. And with Tom's ego and his competitive drive, if it was a problem, I don't think he would be there, you know? And
he'll have the same motivation we talked about with Belichick the other night. He just as equally wants to have a really big season so he can say, see, it was me that, you know, deserves more credit in New England than Belichick.
Yeah, and he's got his safety blanket and Gronk back, which their chemistry is unmatched. So he should be fine. The variables in this division will come from whose defense is going to be better. On paper, I think the Saints still have the best defense. They picked up Malcolm Jenkins, who should be an enforcer for that defense. But that's ultimately what's going to decide this division.
I agree.
Because we know those three teams. We know their quarterbacks. We know their receivers. We know what they can do offensively. Whose defense is going to step up in that division? The Buccaneers are going to New Orleans to take on the Saints in week one. And I want to say that was a field goal too. Yeah. Oh, so you're getting 3.5 against the you're getting 3.5 against the Saints in the Superdome. Where
needs to be reminded too, the Bucs, I believe, have won their last two home openers, or excuse me, road openers at New Orleans. And obviously the crowd's not going to be, as we saw in Kansas City tonight, as big of a factor as it normally is.
And the Saints will not allow fans at that game.
Oh, they're not going to have any.
Nope. According to the notes I have from
I haven't done the lookup of all of them. That kind of surprises me.
So it's no for the first game, and it's just for that first game. I'm going to take my points with the Buccaneers. I'm going to put them in my contest.
Wow.
Yeah, just – because 3.5, I've seen the Saints trick up a lot of games.
And it's definitely a big statement, you know, yeah, for Tampa. And New Orleans, I believe, has lost their first game several of the last few years, right?
Yeah, I've seen the Saints trick it up against the Jameis Winston.
So, no, that was the Ryan Fitzpatrick Bucks.
Oh yeah, the Ryan Fitzpatrick Bucks. Yeah. So I need to see it when Brady and them come to town. And again, I mean, I think it's reasonable to think the Bucs will make the playoffs, especially with the extra team. Mm-hmm. Winning the division, I mean, I'm not, like, putting my hat on it.
What do you think about the Fournette signing? Could it be a big deal?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, it gives them a power game. I think some people have been saying he could be like LeGarrette Blount was for the
or Corey Dillon way back in the day.
Yeah. So, and it's fine because he doesn't have like terrible hands out the backfield. So he could definitely be a three down back for them. And
play action is big for Brady. He could provide a true play action game.
Yeah. And when you got Mike Evans, Goodwin, and
Skinny Gronk.
Yeah, and Gronk out there, you're gonna get less people in the box, you would think, and more attention on the passing game. So it should be a good fit for both of them. I would say the angle for the Buccaneers is to probably take as many points as you can with them. Keep an eye on their defense. I don't know what we're gonna get out of them, but I think the offense should be able to keep them in a lot of games. And if you're giving me 3.5 on Tom Brady and he's motivated, and in this scenario, I really think like this game is going to be a competitive game, and I can see the Saints pulling it off with the last second field goal.
The Bucs defense, you know, needs to be talked about. They got Pierre Paul, They have Sue. I believe they had the number one run defense. You know, if their defense improves and Brady plays, you know, even at 85% of the level, I totally understand why you have them as, you know, potentially the best team in this division and a Super Bowl threat. But I really do, and it's probably my homer hat, but I really like Atlanta this year. They haven't won the division in 2-3 years. We know how that division seems to swap around, and I don't think too many people think Carolina is going to be a contender. I really do like Atlanta this year, and I would look at the odds for them to win the division.
Hey, did you we didn't go over the Falcons Seahawks. Do you think the Falcons pull it off?
I think that they have to, and yes, I do.
It's a 3.5 spread.
Yep, that's what I was going to say. So I really think that they need this win, and they had all that momentum last year. I've read a lot of stuff in the AJC. Quinn has really put pressure on them that they have to get off to a better start because they haven't done that the last 3 seasons since their Super Bowl win, and they're really hyping this game up. And I do think they're going to get the win.
Yeah. So, I'm not even going to dispute that. I think that's a fair thing. You got the Seahawks traveling, to the East Coast. I know it depends on when they get here, I guess, but typically that East Coast, West Coast travel, man, it wears on you. So hopefully they got here. Yeah. Hopefully they got here early, but we're going to get the Falcons.
Hopefully they didn't.
Yeah. We're going to get the Falcons with a healthy roster. It might be the best time to bet them. Mm-hmm. But is there anything that we didn't cover? And I want to give the disclaimer that in future shows, when we do go over our picks and stuff, they won't nearly be this long.
Oh, yeah. And I do want to say, too, that I know you had mentioned, and of course we're going to discuss on the podcast, it's kind of weird, but I am totally down for doing – a sports-centric, you know, backdoor cover. So even if we do 2 or 3 episodes a week, like next week, say, we do one previewing the U.S. Open, and then we do one, say, later in the week previewing the Sunday and, you know, slate of game for NFL, I think that makes a lot of sense, and I'm all for it.
Yeah, I'm gonna definitely try to space it out a little bit more. Sports are returning, and we don't just bet on, you know, golf and things like that, which I love golf, but I'm all over the place. So we need to
definitely bets on horse races, yeah, hockey, you name it.
Yeah, so we're going to definitely branch out a little bit more.
We didn't talk about the horse race. Were you disappointed?
Oh, yeah. And I was going to say that for probably next week, I guess. But yeah, I was disappointed, man. I had Tiz. Baffert didn't even like Authentic. Nobody liked Authentic like that. The only reason Authentic was even boosted is because Nadal was out and because he broke his leg. And then Charlton, the other horse that Baffert had, I think he got in trouble for having an illegal substance in his system. So Baffert actually was suspended for 15 days or something like that, and he appealed it. But like, that was my gripe. I was like, he shouldn't even be there.
When I watched that, you know, because of you, I watched the race. I knew how big you were on the favorite, and yeah, it looked like several times he was going to catch him down the stretch, but he couldn't quite make it up.
Yeah, I can't be mad at Authentic, man. He ran a hell of a race, and I think people don't give these horses credit, man, for being competitive. Like, they're intelligent animals, and I'm telling you, man, the way he ran, and when he came to that final stretch, and that was like the typical moment when Tiz would overtake people, and you could just, like, to me, it's just like, the horse was like, yeah, the horse was like, no, it's like, I'm not losing this shit. So I think the jockeys definitely played a big role in it too, because his jockey's an absolute legend. That was his 200th, I want to say that was his 200th triple crown win.
Wow.
Like, for the, you know, like Preakness and right, Belmont and all that. I think that was like his 200th win, or maybe it was like his 200th win in general. But either way, I mean, that's incredible.
Going to unveil your U.S. Open, when we do our U.S. Open preview, exactly what DJ's Law is? Because you have been cracking me up on text messages.
I'm going to explain it to everybody. And And I'm going to tell you right now, it applies to every single COVID-based sport this year.
I love every single COVID-based sport.
Because it's been happening. It's very true.
It's seriously one of your funniest takes I've heard in the time we've got to know each other. And I just want to make sure we get it coined before I hear it elsewhere.
Yeah, I will definitely do that. But I'll go ahead and be out, and then be on the lookout for the video commentary that we're going to do, which might be replacing the in-game threads. So once I get that set up, I will let you know how that's going to work, okay?
You know I'm looking forward to it, Alan. I enjoyed this. Let's pick a U.S. Open winner next week because we need a winner in golf.
All right, for sure, man. Take care.
Enjoyed it, buddy. Thank you. Bye.